Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are back on a pretty overcast Sunday for us today on this Monday episode of the Dune Minute.
It is perfectly gloomy outside.
Ah, my favorite weather. Just shit.
And John, I gotta say, I'm looking at this empty chair across from us.
Yeah, unfortunately, our guest is also feeling a little gloomy today and could not make it. But the Dune Minute carries forward nonetheless.
Somehow the Dune Minute persists.
Yes.
So it's just us. We made grand promises of two guest weeks in a row.
Back to back, and we flew too close to the sun.
Yes, we did. And just sorry, everyone. We'll refund your money, I guess. But
we'll refund the $0 you paid to listen to this.
But we're going to soldier on. We're going to do it well.
The minute must continue.
The minute must continue for give or take 60 seconds.
We'll see.
How you doing? How you doing, John?
I'm doing well. Feeling a little better this week than I was last week. I was a little under the weather myself last week, so had some time to rest up and be here for today.
Well, I'm glad you are here for today inside your own home.
Yeah, that would be really weird if you came here to record this podcast just by yourself.
I would do it. I have a key.
Oh, I know you would.
And I have to say, man, I got a little bit spooked out when I pulled up today.
All the Halloween decorations are up.
You put up the ghosts in the front, and you got some Bene Gesserit veil looking bullshit on the mantle. Yeah, it looks nice in here. The spooky pillows.
Yeah, the spooky pillows indeed. I love Halloween.
Clearly.
Yeah.
It is. I'll say it's in my top two of the fall holidays.
What's your top one?
Well, Thanksgiving. Not because of the significance, but because of the food.
Yeah.
That's fair. Fuck the significance. I want the food.
I don't give a shit about the people in my life. I care about food.
I mean, no, of course that's not the case. That's just the food is the big draw there.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big cook person.
Well, you and I do Friendsgiving host the Friendsgiving here out of this very same room that the Dune Minute is recorded in every year.
That's very true. Very true. And I think every year we have to explain to people exactly what we do here.
With the Dune Minute?
With the Dune Minute, yes.
Yeah.
Because they don't quite get it.
Like that's fine.
I feel like they don't get it.
Well, see, what's nice is that because the Dune Minute, spoilers, has two and a half weeks more worth of episodes, we won't have to explain the Dune Minute this year at Thanksgiving.
That's very true. Thank goodness for that.
Speaking of having 2.5 weeks left of episodes.
Yeah?
Zach, we're talking about minutes 145, sorry, minute 145 through 146 today.
I almost fucked it up. You almost fucked it up. That one guy from that one email would be so pissed.
You mean my friend Mark?
Sure. I know Mark. I've talked to Mark. Minute. Yes, minute 145 through 146. Before we dive into it, this is canonically week 30 of the Dune Minute.
This is week 30, canonically.
30 weeks.
Because it's an even week, which means that I start with the intros. Because you start with the odd weeks.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, buddy, we're so close. We're so close to the end.
Yeah.
We're going to bang out 8 episodes next week.
Yeah.
And we're going to be done.
Yep. Very excited. I'm very excited to have my weekends back. But yes, it is week 30 of the Dune Minute.
And man, what a week it is.
What a week indeed.
Let us dive into it.
Yeah. Well,
we've gotten Atlanta weather talk out of the way.
Yeah.
We talked about how you're doing. I'm doing fine. Thank you for asking.
The Braves season is over, so there's...
Can't talk about baseball. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could, but like...
I haven't been watching, so...
I will say this. The Mets absolutely fucked themselves by just completely throwing away to the end of their season, which just makes me so warm on the inside.
Hey. If one of us goes down, we all go down.
Fuck the Phillies.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's baseball talk. I think we're good on preamble, so let's just dive into it.
Yep. We left off last week with the death of Baron Vladimir Harkonnen and all the bugs going in and out of his various face holes.
Orifices.
You know, Paul and the rest of the Fremen all made their way to the Imperial Palace in Arakeen, and we have the arrival of the Great Houses in low Arrakis orbit.
That's right. That's right.
And we left off with Paul telling Gurney it's time to get the prisoners, and then Stilgar was directing traffic by yelling in Chocobsa.
That is right. So this week, this minute... starts off with Gurney continuing to do that and still continuing to do that. I should say Stilgar continuing to do that.
Yes. Well, still is...
I've said it on the show.
It's in the books. It's canon.
Paul's just kind of gazing around right now.
He's being Timothy Chalamet, just looking up, being a pretty boy.
He holds, like, you know, the knowledge of past and future events, so he's become even more unsufferable.
Insufferable?
I think I'll stick with unsufferable.
You are insufferable.
I am unsufferable.
No, you are unsufferable. Oh, God. So Paul is looking up at the Great Houses, kind of lost in his own thoughts and everything. Meanwhile, in the background, Chani is continuing the "Hey, glad you made it" conversation, or at least that's what I would assume. It's all all in untranslated Chocobsa.
I just said Fremen pleasantries in the notes. She does not look amused right now, though.
Well, especially once she sees Paul, she's like, "Oh, yeah, no, we're still fighting."
Yeah.
And Paul kind of has a moment where he like stops and looks back at her and then begins to walk over. Now, before we talk about him walking over and everything, I'm going to break tradition a little bit here and just get the elephant out of the room, or talk about the elephant that's in the room.
Okay.
And by the elephant in the room, I mean the lighting that we have for this scene.
Okay.
Because Paul was just looking at this giant window. That wasn't a green screen.
Oh, spoilers. They shot on location.
Yeah, shot on Arrakis. They actually got a bunch of warships. No, the warships obviously were CG, but the way that this room was built is that it was this giant throne room that was built in such a way that it was this window is against a giant diffuser with a absolutely massive array of these LED panels. I say massive array, I'm talking about over 800 individual LED panels.
Neat.
That are in this giant grid to like get the exact lighting that Denis wanted for this scene to make it appear as if it is actually sunrise. They're not doing the tan sand screens that they did in all of their other CG moments or anything like that.
Okay.
The lighting is effectively as real as possible.
Yeah.
In that, you know, it's basically, if you want to equate it to something very simple, a shitload of hue bulbs that are all together in this massive grid. And, you know, Art and Soul has this picture of the grid, and just like, I can't imagine being one of the rigging guys that has to do all of the electrical work for this panel, because it has to just have an insane amount of draw for power.
lighting is one of those things where it is magic, man.
Yeah.
In my brief time where I thought I would pursue photography as a slightly more than a hobby, maybe not a career, I started learning a lot about lighting, and that shit is hard.
Mm-hmm.
So these people who do it for like major film sets, utmost respect, because they are magicians and wizards to me.
Yeah, it's the diffusion layer was like several different kinds of fabrics that they had sure. to make it work, and like let alone just getting the placement and the color temperature of your lighting right, but then having to consider like, okay, how are we diffusing? Are we diffusing through plastic, through fabric, mm-hmm. through glass? Like,
and I wonder if they, since it's trying to mimic a sunrise, I wonder if they, you know, adjusted the brightness and the height of the brightness as the scene goes on, like as the stretch of minutes goes on, to mimic, you know, the sun actually rising, because it would be, you know, coming in at different intensities and different angles and stuff. I don't know if they would go that far, but it would not surprise me at all if they went that far.
They don't mention anything in here about the degree at which the sun is rising in the background, because mm-hmm. admittedly, this scene all happens pretty quick and pretty in real time.
Sure.
But that would certainly be like a behind the scenes trivia thing that I would, if we ever had the opportunity to ask, just be like, hey, was this a consideration that you guys ever had for,
yeah.
you know, start to finish?
Yeah. Cause with all those different panels, I'm sure you could program it to do that.
Oh, almost certainly.
Yeah. So Paul kind of seems to sense Chani's presence in the room, because he just turns around and looks directly at her. She's staring at him, and we get this nice little walk down the stairs from Paul to Chani.
Mm-hmm.
And what's said here is just a tale as old as time, comforting words between lovers.
This isn't over yet.
Yeah, Chani goes, this isn't over yet.
Which basically is, we're still fighting, by the way.
Yeah.
Fuck you. I'm still mad at you.
And Paul responds with maybe what is not the right thing.
When has Paul said the right thing to his girlfriend, fiance, lover, partner, not bride?
Paramour. Paramour the right word? I don't know.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Concubine.
We're about to find out. He goes, I want you to know I will love you as long as I breathe. And it's like, all right, given the context of the rest of this week, what a shitty thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Chani thinks it's shitty as well. I feel like she thinks it's shitty, because the look on her face is like, buddy, we can make that two breaths from now if you want. If you want it to be.
She's fluctuating between like anger and fear and hesitation, and then back to anger. And it's like, boy, you better be careful what the fuck comes out of your mouth.
She does look.
She
like
is she's holding a knife that is bloody as fuck, and she will use it on you.
Yeah, I don't think anyone would have been. Well, a lot of people would have been upset, but us as the third party viewer here,
yeah.
If she just like murked Paul right now, I think we'd be like, yeah, it was justified.
She'd be like, it's the Amtal rule, motherfuckers.
Yeah. She does not look happy. But instead of doing any of that, she just continues to look conflicted and pissed. And she gives this little sigh, and she's interrupted with the doors opening behind him.
Big, big, heavy doors too.
Yes. Big old doors.
Whatever combination of things this Foley artist used to make these big, heavy door sounds, 10 out of 10. I love it.
And it's Gurney. Gurney's back with the prisoners. They must not have been too far away, because that was about 30 seconds of him being gone.
Yep. Yeah, probably just in the next room over or whatever.
Well, he said go get... Or in the scene where they're in the makeshift throne room, Paul says, take them to like basically their quarters.
Yeah.
So maybe they got moved in between then and now into like an ante room off the side.
They just got shoved in a pantry somewhere, probably.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Packed in there. That, like that sardines.
Would make sense because their quarters would have been in the ship and they're off the ship now. So there has been some movement. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, crowd parts, Gurney leads them in, and the Emperor makes or really wastes no time in speaking to Paul.
Well, he's up out front, and then Irulan's right, basically right beside him, a little bit behind. And she's notably missing her like big fancy, you know, face shield, -5 armor points for her. But, you know, she's still got the rest of her chainmail on. So she's got the
head covering, but she doesn't have the mask covering. So there's clearly no mask mandate in the palace. Oh. But she still does have the spiky, the dangly spikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's why it's only -5 armor instead of -10.
Okay. So, got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So Shaddam goes, there is a mast armada. I'm not going to do it.
There's a mast armada in orbit.
I actually typed out 6 ellipses each time he took a pause so I could get the cadence down.
Yeah.
No, but he says, there's a mast armada in orbit. You're facing a full invasion, Fremen. Which, rude. Felt pretty derogatory the way you said Fremen.
Hard N.
It's a hard F on that Fremen. While he's saying all this, Gaius Helen Moheim, who is behind them, veiled up in her classic do.
Yep.
She takes notice of Jessica, who is still in her nice wooden chair.
Who takes notice of her.
Yes. And she gives the slowest, coldest head turn.
It is the coldest head turn to just the biggest shit-eating grin.
Ah, it's beautiful. Oh. It is so, so wonderful.
I love it. I'm going to get ahead of ourselves a little bit. All of the Gaius Helen Moheim, Jessica interactions this week, beautiful. Love them.
Yeah. Yeah, they do some good work here. And there's not a lot of dialogue exchange between them. If any.
I don't think many words need to be said.
Yeah, it's all just looks.
Yeah.
So we get a shot of Chani and almost no emotion or no emotion change from her.
Sure.
She's just kind of like taken all of this in. That's the way I read her face.
I think Chani's like just trying to maintain her composure.
Yeah.
And she's just like, gotta look like tough and intimidating, but also like, what the fuck did my boyfriend just say to me about how he will love me as long as he breathes? What the fuck?
Now, do you remember, I think it was their tent scene or maybe one of their on top of the dune scenes, the last time Paul said he would love her until XYZ, like until some kind of condition? Was it like, I will love you as long that this never changes or something like that?
Well, the last condition that we had was, you will never lose me, Paul Atreides, as long as you stay who you are.
And that was from?
That was Chani to Paul.
Got it.
After Paul had his talk to me, Jamis.
That's right.
Talk to me, Jamis moment.
That's right. Okay, so her condition's been broken, clearly.
Yep.
Paul's condition has not been broken yet. So
he still breathes.
He's still breathing. So the love is a kind of unrequited at this point, I would have to say. So to the Emperor's statement, Paul starts to respond, how can you be so sure the great? And that's it. That's where we end.
The Great White North.
The Great White North.
Take off. It's a beauty way to go.
Is that Fargo?
No.
Oh, okay.
Bob and Doug.
What?
So Rick Moranis.
Yeah.
He's Canadian.
Sure.
I don't remember the other comedian that he was with. Don't at me because I'm not Canadian. I'm not obligated to know these things. But
wow.
Had this show called The Great White North with Bob and Doug McKenzie. And it was basically Wayne's World, but Canada.
Okay.
With Rick Moranis and, hold on.
Yeah, we're going to have to look this up.
Dave Thomas.
Dave Thomas. Dave Thomas of Hootie and the Blowfish?
No.
Or no. Of Santana fame?
No. But they also had an album that they made, also called The Great White North.
Mm.
And the theme song is sung in part by Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas, and by sung by them, I mean it's mostly them just like riffing and like doing a bit, and then Geddy Lee is in the background just singing.
Okay.
Take off to the Great White North. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. Take off.
I'm surprised.
It's the most Canadian ass sounding thing ever.
I'm surprised Dave Thomas had time to do this outside of running the Wendy's Corporation.
Wrong Dave Thomas.
Hey, man, if you're going to have a basic ass name like that, you're going to have a lot of different people.
It's a lot of crossovers here. This is getting weird.
It was Rob Thomas, not fucking Dave Thomas. I'm sorry. Rob Thomas was the musician.
Rob Thomas, yeah, he's Matchbox 20.
Matchbox 20. Okay, well, yes. Listen. Poe Body's nerfic, John.
What are you going to do? But yeah, how can you be so sure the great something? We'll find out tomorrow.
That is it. I'm trying to think how I want to do my book notes for this one, because while this interaction does exist in the books, it is so very different than what we're seeing on screen.
Do you want to just save it till the end of the week?
Sure. I'll sprinkle in some stuff as we go, but it's like, it is so much more involved. This is actually where we get the wonderful writing of Frank Herbert, where Stilgar pops his head into a scene and says, "Oh yeah, Rabin's dead too." and I said Rabin there. Sorry.
What are you apologizing for? It's right.
It's not right. He goes, "Oh yeah, Rabban is dead too." So we get that here. We get just them talking about finding the body of the Baron inside the rubble, basically, of the throne room, which was part of the ship, not a ziggurat, as we see in the movie.
The Imperial tent.
The Imperial tent, that's correct. And what else happens in this? I'm trying to dig into the memory banks.
Well, we have a freaky-ass three-year-old just ninjing her way around this room looking for a knife to stab people with.
Yeah, yeah. She's looking to murk people, the dead and dying. Oh, maybe the biggest injustice, and I think we can talk about this more tomorrow, but...
Thufir Hawat?
Yes. That is the biggest injustice that this movie has done, or is maybe not the biggest, but it is a big one.
Brother, I've got some fucking beefs.
All right. Well, let's get to them tomorrow, because I feel like that's a tomorrow thing.
Well, in the meantime, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. Come back tomorrow. We're going to have some shit to talk about, and I've got some beef.
Hell yeah. See you then.